Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. I want to bring on now investigative journalist Jason Polychron. Jason, thank you very much. In the Greek Orthodox Church in the United States, we used to have dues. We don't call it dues anymore. We call it stewardship, right? Is the difference between what we do and what Jews, Mormons, and Scientologists do, the fact that we don't put a dollar figure on stewardship? If you want to give the church $100 a year, give them 100, or 1,000, or 10,000, or 1,000,000. Is it that there's a dollar figure attached? Is that what this is about?
No. John, let me ask you this. Let's say somebody wants to attend a Greek Orthodox church,
right,
and they never want to pay one dime of stewardship. Would they be denied access to the church?
Absolutely not. Everybody's welcome.
Okay. All right. So you see, these stewardships that you're talking about, they're not quid pro quo transactions.
That's
they're
right.
Voluntary donations. And a donation, or what's in the Hernandez ruling, it's called an unrequited gift, is when you give money and you get nothing in exchange.
Nothing in return.
That is a donation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that's why. So with the 501c3 tax-exempt organization, which religions fall under 501c3, if you donate money to a 501c3 tax-exempt organization, you're allowed to deduct it from your taxes. But if it's a quid pro quo transaction with a 501c3 per the law, you're not allowed to deduct it. But again, the IRS is presently allowing the quid pro quo transactions of Mormon or LDS Mormon religion, Judaism, and Scientology now to be deducted in violation of the law and in violation of the Supreme Court Hernandez ruling.
Right, right, right. Okay, so this happened. Immediately, the Church of Scientology sees that it has an opening. Then what did it do? It's already failed at trying to intervene in day-to-day operations of the IRS or, of all things, the Coast Guard Intelligence Service. So what did it do in this case?
Well, what happened was, John, is these two lawsuits that I mentioned, Garrison and Powell, were chugging through the courts. And in 19... Yeah, right, 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 right. On the 22nd of October, 1991, there was a favorable ruling in the Powell case, which was in the 11th Circuit. That means that Scientology was on its way with the Powell case to proving the administrative inconsistency on the IRS that Justice O'Connor warned about. So what happened was, is the head of Scientology, David Miscavige, literally, him and another church official by the name of Marty Rathbun, went to the IRS headquarters building in Washington, and they just walked in and said, we want to speak with a man named Fred Goldberg, who's the commissioner of the IRS at the time. And they had no appointment. And the next week, Fred Goldberg agreed to meet with them. All right. Now, we know that this meeting took place because, well, number one, David Miscavige said that this impromptu meeting took place. But then in 1997, the closing agreement between the IRS and Scientology leaked. It leaked to either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. I forget which one. I think it was the New York Times. Anyway, it leaked. And in the closing agreement, the IRS acknowledged that this meeting took place. So now both sides are saying that the meeting happened. And in this meeting, David Miscavige said to Fred Goldberg, if you give us tax exemption, all of the lawsuits go away, every single one of them. So what happened was, is Fred Goldberg formed a special committee to review Scientology's, whether or not they qualify for tax exemption. Now, what's important to understand is that Fred Goldberg, the meeting took place in late October of 91. Fred Goldberg's tenure as commissioner of the IRS concluded the 2nd of February, 1992. So he only had 4 months left in office when he took the meeting with Miscavige. So Fred Goldberg kind of had nothing to lose. So he formed a special committee to review Scientology's petition for tax exemption. And the special committee was headed up by a man named Howard Schoenfeld. And it's this is all on my website. And they reviewed Scientology's petition for tax exemption for 2 years until October of 1993. And just for what it's worth, quick side note, there's a law called the Church Audit Procedures Act of 1983, which says that an examination of a church petition for tax exemption can only last 2 years. Oh. And then the government's not allowed to revisit the tax exemption for another 5 years. But anyway, this special committee concluded that Scientology qualifies for tax exemption. So on October the 1st, 1993, the exemption was granted. And true to his word, all of the lawsuits that Scientology and Scientologists filed were dropped. But most importantly, the Garrison case and the Powell case, the two cases where the administrative inconsistency was being argued. And that was it. It was over. It was sort of like defusing a bomb. By granting Scientology its tax exemption, the IRS never had the administrative inconsistency that Justice O'Connor warned about proven on it. And so they never had to deny the deductibility of LDS Mormon tithing, Jewish temple dues, and now they're allowing the quid pro quo transactions of Scientology to be deducted in violation of the law and the Hernandez ruling. But I'm sorry, I think I got a little...
Are there any other organizations that get that kind of a sweetheart deal?
You mean where the IRS just outright breaks the law on their behalf?
Yeah, and just says, oh, okay, you can keep all that money. Just go ahead and keep it. No sense in paying taxes on it.
None that I'm aware of. Not to this magnitude, John. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there who know of times where the IRS maybe didn't collect all the money that was supposed to be paid, but I'm not aware of those. This is the most egregious, again, that I'm aware of.
I have a friend who's an IRS agent. Actually, that's not true. He just retired last month as an IRS agent. And he said that more than 90% of the investigations that the IRS does are when one divorcing spouse rats out the other divorcing spouse for not paying taxes or for hiding money someplace. And even if they wanted to go after these big organizations, big churches, big tech, big whatever, they don't have the manpower to do it. It's easier to go after the little guy and break him because he can't afford legal representation. And so they break him and force him into paying penalties and interest and, you know, quarterly taxes for the next 5 years. Why bother with the Church of Scientology or with, you know, international Judaism when they have unlimited funds that they can use to hire lawyers to fight you?
Yeah, that's true, John. But if you remember, I talked about the Church Audit Procedures Act of 1983. Mm-hmm. Basically, this act makes it practically impossible to audit a religion because it sets this artificial timeline. You have 2 years to do it, and that's it. And there is no way the IRS could ever do a proper audit of some of these religions that have, depends on which one, but they can have, you know, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. Well, I won't use any other names, but, you know, some religions have millions of members in the U.S. How are you going to do a proper audit of an organization of that magnitude in 2 years? And so if you look at like how many times the IRS audits a religion, basically they don't.
They don't.
Yeah, there was something else. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and it's so hard to audit an organization that is as secretive as the Church of Scientology and as accomplished as it is in hiding its assets all over the world, mostly in the form of real estate. There's an attorney that I know in Washington, D.C., one of the most highly respected constitutional attorneys who practices law. And he told me more than once that if you really want to hide money, if you really want to launder money, you can do it with racehorses, fine art, and real estate.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were talking about how Scientology translates its money into real estate so that they can hold on to it. But you know, Scientology is not the only religion that does this. I will, like, for instance, just real quick, I know there's a building in Manhattan, New York, called The New Yorker. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a magazine called The New Yorker. That's not what I mean. There's an actual building with a big red sign on top that reads The New Yorker. And it's owned by the Unification Church, otherwise known as the Moonies.
Right. Reverend Sun Myung Moon and his family.
Yeah. You know, this whole business of religions and tax-exempt organizations translating their wealth into real estate is not just Scientology that does this. This is just the... I wanted to talk about, John, that I didn't mention the last time you and I interviewed, but I thought it was important. I was mentioning that lawsuit war between 86 and 93, where Scientology filed 2,400 lawsuits. And we did talk about how there's this sort of belief out there that Scientology bullied the IRS into granting the exemption, and that's what motivated the IRS to grant the exemption, which is completely false. Everybody believes that Scientology beat up the IRS. They didn't. It was the Hernandez ruling. And I wanted to just say to you and to say to your audience, there's a very quick way to dispel this narrative. And it's just simply this. If you Google search how many cases are docketed in the U.S. tax court every year, you'll see that it's about 25,000 to 30,000 presently. And Scientology filed 2,400 lawsuits over about a six-year period, from about 86 to 93, but call it 6 years to make it easy. And so that comes out to about, you know, on average, 400 lawsuits per year, you know, for 6 years.
Yep.
That is not a litigation nightmare for the IRS. That is routine business. And this narrative that Scientology bullied the IRS is just—it's just provably false and frivolous. Anyway, I just wanted to say that real quick. Thank you.
You bet, Jason. Thank you very much. When we come back, we'll have more with investigative journalist Jason Polycron. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Stay right there. Welcome back to The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We're joined again today by our guest, investigative journalist Jason Polycron. Is the government today doing anything at all to confront the Church of Scientology, whether it's about taxes or
no.
behavior or anything? And the reason I ask is because it's no secret I served 23 months in prison after blowing the whistle on the CIA's torture program. You mentioned it at the start of the show. But my job in prison was to work in the chapel. And I was surprised to find that amidst the Catholics, the Orthodox, the Protestants, the Mormons, the Jews, the Muslims, the Wiccans, there were no accommodations made for Scientologists. And there was one Scientologist prisoner who asked for some books about Scientology to be sent to the chapel library. He wanted what they call an e-meter to measure his I don't know what. And and he was denied. So he filled out a form appealing the denial, called a form, it was an 8.5, then a 9, a 10, an 11. The 11 went all the way to the Bureau of Prisons headquarters in Washington, D.C. And the 11 was denied with a letter back to him stating that the Bureau of Prisons does not recognize the Church of Scientology as a religion. And I remember thinking, that's funny. Maybe somebody should tell Internal Revenue Service that the Department of Justice doesn't recognize the Church of Scientology as a religion. I wasn't quite sure what to make of it.
I'm going to look that up. To be honest with you, John, you just educated me about something about Scientology. I didn't know that the Bureau of Prisons denied it. They don't recognize it. That's something to look up.
Isn't that funny?
Okay. Yeah.
I sort of egged him on just because I was having fun watching this whole process play out. So I said, you should write, instead of writing to the Bureau of Prisons, you should write to the Church of Scientology and write an outraged letter and say, hey, you know, what are you going to do about this? So he did. He wrote to the Church of Scientology and in Clearwater, Florida, which is what they call FLAG, because it's again, one of these weird naval terms. It's their headquarters.
Well, an admiral's a flag officer.
An admiral's a flag officer. So FLAG wrote back to him and said, yeah, we tried. There's nothing we can do about it. Sorry, buddy. And then that was the end of it.
Yeah. You know, the only story that I'm aware of regarding Scientology in prison was Charles Manson. Apparently, Charles Manson was given some Scientology books when he was in prison. And the story goes, the warden wrote, well, at least Charlie's into something. And then Charles Manson gave up on it and said, that religion's too weird.
Oh, my God. That's right out of a television comedy. For our viewers who don't know, Charles Manson was a notorious cult leader who was convicted of being an accessory to, a half a dozen murders that took place in Los Angeles in 1969. He spent the rest of his life in prison and died, I'm going to say, 7 or 8 years ago.
Something like that. He held on there for quite a while. So I'm trying to think of what else did I really want to make sure to put out. Well, I don't know, John. I'll just say this. I think if your audience hasn't picked up on it already, I'm hoping to solicit anyone's help in whatever capacity they have to help me to get this crime exposed and stopped. And if you're interested in
And that's what I want to ask you about, Jason. So you've identified a crime. You lay out a case that a crime has been committed. Now, it may be viewed by many as a process crime or a crime that's so specific or technical that it should be, you know, between the attorneys. But it's a crime nonetheless.
Yes.
And so how, first of all, I'm assuming the victim in the case would be the American people because, in effect, they're being defrauded of tax revenue. How do you go about getting such a crime to be recognized? And then even if it is recognized, what do you do about it?
Well, the law enforcement authority who's most responsible for the IRS committing a crime is called the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration. They have offices all over the country. Huh. And they have a complaint form on their website. I hate to say this, but, you know, like any bureaucracy, you fill out a form and then it just blows off into the ether. But if enough people start sending in complaint after complaint after complaint, then you know, hopefully the people at TIGTA are going to say, hey, wait a minute, maybe there is something going on here. Another way, obviously, is journalism. I don't know, John. To me, the Internal Revenue Service taking a Supreme Court ruling and throwing it in the waste bin is hot news. And if any journalists out there, especially investigative journalists, want to go to my website, because we've only just scratched the surface here, but I lay out my entire argument, plus all 51 of my sources. I, of course, invite everyone to fact check me. I would never ask anyone to take me at face value. That's ridiculous. So by all means, fact check me. And if journalists out there start to realize that I'm right, perhaps you would like to start advertising this to the public. Now, there's one piece of evidence that I can just tell you real quickly, John, that I think is pretty solid piece of evidence. There was a lawsuit entitled Sklar v. Commissioner. That's S-K-L-A-R v. Commissioner. And the final determination was the 12th of December, 2008. And in that ruling, three federal judges opined that the IRS is acting unconstitutionally and unlawfully. Okay, so just for your audience's background, this has already been reviewed by federal judges. The problem is that the judges could only rule on the Sklar's lawsuit. So they looked, because Scientology's tax exemption and the Hernandez ruling was entered as evidence. So the judges could see that the IRS was violating this, but they could only rule on the Sklar case. So they did. And the best that the judges could do was write. The IRS is acting unconstitutionally. The IRS is acting unlawfully.
Wow.
So if people out there like lawyers, because I'm not a lawyer, but like lawyers, like judges say, you know, this guy's an amateur and he doesn't know what he's talking about, please understand that among other things, I am quoting federal judges when I say that the IRS is acting unconstitutionally and unlawfully. But all of my sources is on my website, and I invite absolutely everyone to read them and fact check me. But it's going to take a while. We talked about this before. Tax crimes and financial crimes, these are complicated. They're puzzles, right? They're real puzzles. I don't know. You said that you had a buddy that's a retired IRS agent. Well, you know, if someone's a retired IRS, if they're a retired Treasury official, if they're a retired law enforcement, DOJ, and you know, maybe retirement isn't all it's cracked up to be, and you're looking for another opportunity to get back into the saddle and affect positive change and stop a serious case of deep state activity, the IRS just telling, insulting the authority of the Supreme Court. Well, I've got an opportunity and a saddle that you can jump back into one more time into the breach.
Jason, I've said before on different podcasts, and I've told you offline, that in the year 2020, I was hired by an investment banking company. And I was hired into an executive position, which I jumped at. It was the opportunity of a lifetime. I was there for 6 weeks, and I realized that this is a money laundering operation. It's an international money laundering operation. I immediately called my attorney. And I said, look, I'm the COO, the chief operating officer of this company. And I've recognized almost immediately it's involved in international money laundering. What should I do? And he said, download every document you can get your hands on, and we'll go together to the FBI. So I downloaded 15,000 pages of documents proving fraud and money laundering and income tax evasion on a massive scale. I called the FBI, couldn't get through. I wrote to the FBI. I said, I really, really need to see an FBI agent. I have evidence of a major crime. Here are my bona fides. I'm not a nut. I'm a former CIA officer. I'm the COO of this investment bank. I have the physical documents. They said, call 311. I said, 311 is the number that you call to fix a pothole. I'm not going to call 311. They said, well, if you call 311, they'll recognize that it's a law enforcement issue. They'll call the police. Then the police will recognize that it's a law enforcement issue, and they'll call us. I said, I'm not going to waste my time. Either you're interested or you're not interested. But I was so frustrated that I said to my lawyer, there has to be a back way that we can get to the FBI. Well, it turned out we had a mutual friend who had been the deputy director of the FBI 25 years ago. So we called him. He said, sure, I'll get you into the FBI. So we went to meet him. And while we were there, he called the FBI, and an FBI agent agreed to see us in the Washington field office. A couple of days later, my lawyer and I go with my thumb drive with the 15,000 pages of documents. We go to the FBI's Washington field office. And we're sitting at the table. I start talking to explain what it is that we're doing there. I'm not 20 seconds into my presentation. And he says, guys, if this doesn't have Russia, China, terrorism, or January 6th associated with it, we're not interested. And then he pushed the thumb drive back across the table to give it back to me. And that was the end of it. Jason Polycron, investigative journalist, thank you very much for being with us today. And thank you for watching. This is The Deep State. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.